The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I'm Derek Frost for the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading from the Triangle Business Journal. And we'll start on the front page of the Triangle Business Journal with the cover story headline, Rising to be near the customer. Retailers start tapping areas outside the Triangle's core counties as people move to the outer rim to keep the cost of living down. And the cover story begins inside the Triangle Business Journal with the second headline, Retail on the Rim. Small towns across the region are adding amenities usually seen in larger cities. Written by Laura Bromet. A decade ago, the thought of the small town of Dunn having a Starbucks probably would have prompted laughs, but in late 2020, the Seattle Coffee Company opened a full-service location in Dunn, the largest city in Harnett County with 8,446 residents. Now, the East Cumberland Street store, sees steady business. Starbucks, like a lot of other retailers, is following the growth, says Christian Lockamy, Director of Economic Development for Harnett County. They're looking at areas that are growing based on population estimates. You couple that with retail analysis, and that's when they start to really dig in and say, maybe this area can support this. Living on the outskirts of the Triangle has long been adapting to life in a retail desert. The slower pace of living and cheap land that Greater Triangle County's promise is often meant being miles away from many major retailers. But now, on the heels of rapid population and economic growth, these retail deserts have the chance to attract the same brands you find in the urban areas of the Triangle. While the Triangle is a saturated retail market, the brands are seeing opportunities in the outlying towns and cities. Home buyers are heading out to Lee, Harnett, Chatham, Franklin, and Johnston counties to find bigger homes at better prices, prompting the demographics of those towns and cities to become more favorable for bigger companies. The projected population growth combined with the rise of area income is enough to start a trend. South of the Triangle, Moore County is eyeing its first target, which is expected to anchor the planned Morganton Park South mixed-use development. In Lee County, one of the smallest counties in the state by land area, locals can now hang out at one of Sanford's three craft breweries. Lockamy, with 20 years of working in economic development, knows that towns and counties have to have the residential population first. It's hard to recruit those types of retailers and restaurants without there being that population, he says. They're making business decisions. There has to be a supporting cast of people to be able to build the store and have enough volume to make the financials work. Turning to Amazon. Longtime Lee County residents are accustomed to planning day trips just to shop at retail stores, driving about an hour to Raleigh or Durham. But for newcomers Hannah Kaufman and her husband Will McCarthy, not having a Target within walking distance was a big adjustment. The couple moved to Sanford in September 2020 after McCarthy was stationed at Fort Bragg, just south of the Lee County town. The two St. Louis natives had lived in Chicago for 2 years in the Rogers Park neighborhood. Not only was Target close by, but they could also hop on a train and be at any store they could dream of in 10 or 15 minutes, Kaufman says. Once the couple landed in Sanford, that quick train ride or short walk was traded for an hour in a car to reach the same stores. It was a really tough time. Neither one of us was able to come down here beforehand, so we actually had to pick out our home on the internet, Kaufman says. On Google, the small southern town seemed promising. The couple paid around $1,200 a month in rent for their one-bedroom Chicago apartment with no washer and dryer, no dishwasher, and no air conditioning. The apartment community they found online in Sanford was cheaper, $1,050 for a two-bedroom unit, and with all the amenities their Chicago apartment lacked. But shortly after Kaufman and McCarthy moved into the new space, they realized the sweet deal they had thought they found wasn't so much of a deal after all. Whether it's retail or food, there's just not as much variety of options, and that can be hard coming from such a major city, Kaufman says. You have to narrow your scope. Not always wanting to make the drive up to Triangle cities or not having the time, the couple now resorts to Amazon for most of their shopping. Kaufman, a music teacher at W.B. Wicker Elementary School in Sanford, misses being able to easily shop in person at stores. Though Amazon promises convenience with thousands of vendors and fast shipping, having to rely on the site for all the retail purchases is not ideal, she says. Not having all of the options we're used to can be hard, Kaufman says. I don't always like to support Amazon, but you just can't go to Raleigh every weekend. If McCarthy wasn't stationed at Fort Bragg, the couple would have moved to Raleigh, dubbing them both city people, Kaufman says. The two value being close to a variety of stores and food options over small-town life. However, there is one offering in Sanford that has impressed the pair. While there may not be a Target, there are several grocery stores all within close proximity to each other. Sanford's grocery lineup includes Matthews-based Lowe's Foods, German grocers Lidl and Aldi, Piggly Wiggly, and Salisbury-based Food Lion. Despite the lack of retail chains in Lee County, residents' shopping habits are on an upward trend. Whether they're shopping on websites like Amazon or in local stores, Sanford residents are buying more. In just 10 years, the county's sales tax collection amount has increased by nearly $10 million. Companies such as Starbucks are ready to capitalize on Sanford residents' spending. The coffee chain opened its first store in the area near the Lee and Harnett County line in 2016. The company now has a second location under construction in Sanford's Spring Lane Galleria Shopping Center. Greensboro-based Cotus Properties is building a three-tenant outparcel featuring Starbucks and burrito chain Bar Burritos, set to deliver soon, according to its website. Within a one-mile radius of the new coffee store, the average household income is $68,380, Cotus says. Sanford's median household income is $52,294, according to U.S. Census data. That number isn't straying far from the state's median household income of $56,642. Luring national retailers. Over 360,000 people moved to North Carolina in 2019, according to U.S. Census data, and thousands more followed over the course of the pandemic. Small to mid-sized cities like Raleigh became popular destinations for those fleeing densely populated areas like New York City. Around 23,000 of the newcomers hailed from New York alone. On top of looking for a lower cost of living and better weather, many of the migrators were also looking for space to raise a family. Gary Sankari, retail industry marketing analyst, strategist for Esri, says. Millennials have been leaving cities and moving out into the suburbs and even to the exurbs, he says. When you graduate and you're a young professional, you want to be in the city and close to everything. You like the idea of a neighborhood vibe, Sankari says. As these folks start to get older, they get married, they start families, and they start having kids. Then they look for some of the things that they grew up with, like good schools. The flow of people into the Greater Triangle area has caught the attention of retailers. As the population shifts, companies are working to identify the trends and then react to match the movement. Part of the calculation for choosing new locations is the number of households within a close radius to potential sites. Retailers develop customer profiles and look to enter markets where they believe their target customer has a strong presence. Relevant data includes median household income, size of households, and traffic counts. The customer profile for Starbucks will likely be different than Raleigh-based Advance Auto Parts, who would be looking for a do-it-yourself type, Sankari says. Companies utilize software from Esri and others to find concentrations of their targeted customers in various markets. Once targets are identified, companies consider competitor presence, proximity to their own store locations, and pinpoint areas of opportunity. Some chains tend to follow other companies into markets or specific shopping center locations. One of Sankari's clients, identified only as a home improvement retailer, looks for certain complementary businesses to their customer base when choosing locations. For instance, the company might be more likely to open in a location that has a Chick-fil-A in the parking lot, Sankari says. Some of those relationships you'd never believe, but they've done studies to determine what is complementary to their business, he says. For areas like Lee County, with dozens of new 100-home subdivisions in the works, building permits can also help draw in retailers. Companies use permits and filings from developers as a source of data for opportunistic growth. The number of and size of homes, along with projected price points, is helpful in telling companies where they should be entering next. Some residential builders are also trying their hand at commercial development to build retail centers to support their planned housing developments, Sankari says. Jeff Nimmer, retail specialist at the shopping center group Raleigh, has noticed the rising costs in the core of the triangle pushing some companies and tenants out. Lease rates for existing real estate are rising, and supply chain delays and shortages are making new construction more expensive. It's getting so expensive in the core of the triangle that if you want to do anything, you have to look at the suburbs or even the exurbs to get deals done, Nimmer says. Even places like Holly Springs and Fuquay-Varina are getting expensive. Another reason for the push to the outskirts of the Triangle is national chains looking to increase their volume of stores in the market. Whether it's for internal goals or Wall Street goals, many brands are having to look at smaller markets to meet their store quotas, Nimmer says. Companies like Starbucks, Chipotle, and Panera are examples of chains that have traditionally been in big to mid-sized markets that are now doing deals in smaller areas. Favorable spots for that kind of growth in the Greater Triangle include Clayton, Smithfield, Lillington, Sanford, and Pittsburgh, Nimmer says. These are all places that are seeing more and more activity just because of their proximity to the Triangle, he says. These areas that were on the exterior of the Triangle are going to be part of it very soon. The cost of land being cheaper in the outer counties allows for lease rates in those areas to be less than in Raleigh or Durham. A new development in Raleigh, like East End Market or Raleigh Ironworks, has rates per square foot ranging from the high 30s to the low 40 dollars, Nimmer says. He's even seen some new construction in the Triangle, quoting tenants in the $50 range per square foot. Each deal is dependent on what the developer paid for the land and factors like construction costs, but lease rates in areas outside of the Triangle could be around 20% cheaper than inside, Nimmer says. Land pricing is going to be cheaper in a place like Sanford or Lillington, he says. As a result, rental rates for new construction will be cheaper. That's the advantage to going into the outskirts of the Triangle. Growth in Harnett County. Harnett County's population has already grown by around 25,000 people in a decade, now reaching almost 140,000 people. But growth is just getting started, Lockamy says. The number of planned apartment and housing units alone signifies the growth that is to come, along with recent job announcements. Vietnamese car maker VinFast announced in March that the company will be opening a 7,500-job facility in Harnett's neighbor, Chatham County. Moves like that will help boost Harnett County's population explosion, he says. Along with growth in the number of people in the county, Lockamy has also seen an upward trend in median household income, an important factor in attracting retail. Harnett's median household income most recently was recorded at $54,565, according to the U.S. Census data. On top of the demographics, lower lease rates are also helping the county land retail tenants, he says. If you're a market that's in transition, lease rates are more competitive than an area that has already grown and only has a couple of spaces left where retailers can locate, Lockamy says. Another attractive statistic is the increase Harnett County has seen in resident spending. Out of all of Wake County's Greater Triangle neighbors, Harnett County saw the biggest jump in sales tax collections from 2016 to 2021. Though Franklin, Chatham, and Johnston counties were all close to hitting the 100% increase mark, Harnett's local option sales tax collection more than doubled over the five-year period. The amount rose from around $19.27 million in fiscal year 2016 to about $39.71 million in fiscal year 2021. That jump is due to residents shopping at existing stores more often, new spots opening up during the pandemic, and e-commerce seeing an increase in activity, Lockamy says. In terms of luring in new brands, he has his sights set on bringing more grocery-anchored shopping centers to Harnett for stores like Harris Teeter and Trader Joe's that typically appear in larger markets. Lockamy is betting that Harnett County is already appearing on their radars. It's just a matter of time before it makes financial sense for those companies to make the investment in the area, he says. Chatham Park's emerging vision. On Wake County's eastern border, Chatham County has quietly supplied residential housing for the Triangle for decades. The county's development skews overwhelmingly away from commercial projects, with 92% of the space being residential, Preston Development founder Tim Smith says. That's reflected in the lack of county-provided sewer services, making it difficult for commercial developers to build in the county. In 2006, Smith and his team set out to build a massive planned community in Chatham County despite that hurdle. Still under construction, Preston Development's Chatham Park will feature 22,000 homes and 22 million square feet of commercial space when fully complete. The team saw what many others 20 years ago did not, the growth opportunity in the Greater Triangle region. We didn't have visions of a VinFast with thousands of employees coming to Sanford and the mega site, Smith says, but we did have a vision of being one of the large developments in the area. The Chatham County land was chosen for its cheap cost in comparison to Wake County prices. For a project the size of Chatham Park, tackling the sewer problem was worth the effort for Preston Development. Today, the price of land in Chatham County is still about a third or a fourth of the cost of land in Cary, Smith says. In order to make the development work, Preston Development is including restaurants, entertainment space, retail, and service companies in the project. Bringing in those tenants now will mean that Chatham Park residents won't have to drive 25 minutes to reach basic retail. Given the lack of commercial development in general in the area, that piece of the project is a necessity for the community to grow, Smith says. Normally, when a developer develops, the last thing they build is the retail, Chuck Smith, vice president of land planning for Preston, says. We're doing it opposite. We're putting all that in first. It helps sell houses. Two of the commercial spaces within the larger development, Mosaic and Northwood Landing, are already in the works. Kirk Bradley, CEO of Lee Moore Capital, is working with Preston Development to execute the firm's retail plans. Northwood Landing alone will feature about 300,000 square feet of space, anchored by a 50,000 square foot Lowe's Foods grocery store. At first, attracting national tenants took some extra finesse, Bradley says. Companies usually look at the demographics of 1 to 5 mile radius of a site, but he instead sends companies information on the area within a 5 to 25 minute drive from Chatham Park. That way, brands can see just how much residential space is in the area with little to no retail or services. Following the VinFast announcement of bringing 7,500 jobs to southern Chatham County, Bradley saw interest from national companies accelerate. It tells me the jobs are registering with the national folks, Bradley says. Even though the way they do demographics may not match up, they can understand it. And now we turn to the continuing series, 52 Shades of Success. The headline, Unmasking the Stigma. Businesses are looking to provide a more comprehensive, holistic approach to mental health in the workplace. Story by Connie Gentry. About this project, the 52-week project showcases accomplishments, challenges, and opportunities of individuals and businesses run by people of color, women, immigrants, veterans, representatives from the LGBTQ plus community, and a few other groups forwarding the mission of diversity, equity, and inclusion in the greater Raleigh-Durham metro area. The project also will delve into important trends and issues relating to DEI. Businesses of every size and across every industry face a new healthcare imperative, the need to prioritize and support the mental health of employees in the same way as their physical health. Before the pandemic, 11% of adults in the U.S. reported feeling anxious or depressed. By November 2020, that number had jumped to 42.6% of the adult population, according to the Kaiser Family Foundation, or KFF. While the pandemic has waned in the U.S., the mental health struggles persist. In March of this year, roughly a third, 31.5% of adults were struggling with anxiety or depressive disorder, per KFF. The need to support mental wellness has become an undeniable reality and forced a new reckoning of what wellness entails. The transition starts with business leaders and coworkers who are willing to confront the inherent bias that has stifled support in the past. Now, two of the Triangle's largest employers, Blue Cross and Blue Shield of North Carolina and UNC Health, are tackling that challenge head-on, not only in the work they do in caring for customers and patients, but also starting in their own houses, providing care and support to thousands of employees. Employers need to recognize that we can't stigmatize mental health. It is a fact of life, says Farah Palumbo, Chief People Officer at Blue Cross NC. The pandemic produced heightened levels of stress, and we have world issues that are very stressful and national issues that are stressful. It is a confluence of all these events that place a burden on people and make them worried about the future. It is critical that we give individuals space in the workplace to be supported from a mental health perspective, she adds. At the start of this year, Blue Cross NC expanded its benefits package to add 2 days to every employee's PTO, paid time off, quota, designating the additional time off for mental wellness. We felt it was critical to add the well-being days to support the emotional and mental health needs of a workforce because there are times in anyone's work life where they may simply need to call a time out and tend to their psychological needs just as they would to physical needs, Palumbo says. Ironically, that admission has been hardest among essential healthcare professionals who were subject to burnout and often didn't take the PTO days they had accumulated even before the pandemic demanded excessive hours and relentless schedules. At UNC Health, Dr. Lynn Fiskus, president and CEO of UNC Physicians Network, says increasing the PTO quota won't help if the employees aren't using what they have. Healthcare professionals are so busy taking care of others, they don't use all the days off they earn. The first step here is normalizing taking time off and helping them understand this is a part of being well, she says. UNC Health's internal wellness program was focused initially around employee burnout, but now they've expanded how they're talking about wellness to encompass the employee's overall behavioral health. If I look back 3 years ago, we didn't talk about anxiety and depression openly at work, Fiske says. The transformational piece is how we talk about it all the time now, and as a leader, I'm trying to encourage and destigmatize the seeking of mental health care. There is no medal at the end of COVID for getting through this without professional help. We want people to seek help, to understand that physical health and mental health are interrelated. For businesses, the intersection of physical and mental health resides to a large extent in the benefits and health plans being offered to employees. Most organizations spent years building wellness plans that are very much tied to physical well-being, and it's really time for us to think differently about that, Palumbo says. It is critical that benefits plans give the same attention to mental health as we've been giving to physical health. In its 2021 Employer Health Benefits Survey, KFF determined that 39% of the firms surveyed have made changes since the pandemic to meet the mental health needs of employees. Among the firms, all of which had 50 or more employees and offered health benefits, the most prevalent change, 31%, was an expansion of the ways in which enrollees could access mental health or substance abuse, MHSA, services, with telehealth services leading the way. The goal for businesses, Fiske suggests, is to bring parity in behavioral health care coverage closer to that of traditional medical care for physical health. Access to care, both in terms of logistics and affordability, are key. During the pandemic, behavioral health became one of the most utilized services of telehealth, and at Blue Cross NC, about half of all telehealth claims were for behavioral health. A lot of counseling and therapy services are not well covered, so out-of-pocket costs become a significant barrier to people getting the care they need, Fiske says. As businesses work with healthcare benefit providers, they should pay attention to the choices they have that will make it easier for employees. Check into the employee assistance program you're offering and make sure it is comprehensive. Parity and equity go hand in hand, and both are sorely lacking in behavioral health services for underrepresented communities. The pandemic created a disproportionate impact on mental health among communities of color. 48% of black adults and 46.3% of Hispanic or Latinx adults reported anxiety or depression, compared with 40.9% of white adults. Among Asian adults, 33.1% reported anxiety or depression. We want to make sure everyone, our employees as well as the communities we serve, have access to high-quality behavioral health care, says Dr. Tedra Anderson Brown, Behavioral Health Medical Director at Blue Cross NC. Part of this is recognizing that communities of color as well as rural communities have been more adversely impacted by COVID. For example, Blue Cross NC is supporting El Futuro, which works to improve the quality of mental health care for Latinx families in North Carolina, and Youth Stress, which is raising awareness of the importance of mental health in the black community. Our company has committed $1 million to support community-based initiatives that will improve access to behavioral health care for historically underserved communities in rural areas. And we're investing in nonprofits and communities that have been designated as health professional shortage areas, or HPSAs, across the state to make sure that people in those communities have access to behavioral health resources, Anderson Brown says. In a report released March 31 on the designated HPSAs across the country, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services said North Carolina is meeting only 13.23% of the state's needs for mental health care. Only four states rank lower than North Carolina in failing to meet needs for mental health care. I do believe there is a significantly lower proportion of minority patients seeking care for behavioral health and a higher stigma in some minority communities about seeking mental health care, Fiske says. And as employers, there is an important role that we can play in normalizing and encouraging mental health care and removing any barriers. Stan Keimer, president of Total Engagement Consulting, has witnessed that throughout his career, first in the 3 decades he worked at IBM, including 4 years as IBM's global LGBT diversity manager, and over the past 12 years coaching businesses on how to build a DEI strategy. I'm not a mental wellness expert, so when I'm leading diversity training, I start with the diversity strategy and then drill down to mental wellness, says Keimer, who also facilitates a diversity certification program for the National Diversity Council. Supporting mental awareness is a key factor for hiring and retaining employees. There's more demand than supply for people, so companies have to treat their people right, value them as full human beings, and do things to address their mental wellness, Keimer says. A recent study of 3,000 full-time employees conducted by the mental wellness app Calm for Business found that 97% say their employer should be working to improve mental health of employees, and 76% say mental health benefits were critical to them when evaluating a new job. It starts at the top, but businesses have to embed mental health inclusion throughout the ranks. You have to operationalize it, get the message down to middle management and to the actual individual contributor level, Keimer says. Businesses can engage with local organizations and partner with faith-based or community groups that serve underrepresented communities to make care more accessible and more inclusive across populations. NAMI Wake, the local chapter of the National Alliance on Mental Illness, provides free resources and support to anyone impacted by mental illness. James Miller, the organization's engagement and outreach coordinator, says the support extends across the triangle and is not limited to those in Wake County. He encourages businesses to promote interpersonal communication among coworkers. Many times, people are more honest and direct with a coworker, and talking with peers can be just as effective as talking with a boss. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the biz, a quick glance at Triangle happenings, written by managing editor Dane Huffman. Downtown Cary sees new life. Cary is upping its cool factor with a downtown that has a rising sense of vibrancy and an impressive park on the way. It's finally starting to pay off, says Sean Stiegel, Cary's town manager. It takes a long time for downtowns to reach that critical mass, and now it's just exploding. The downtown park has been 2 decades in the making, and now the scope of the 6 acres of the new project is clear. As wide swaths of dirt have been moved and structures are taking shape, the park is adjacent to the downtown library, close by the Cotton House Brew Pub, and easily walkable to the Cary Theater and the Maiton Hotel. Once completed in 2023, the park will feature a great lawn and a tiered water feature as well, as places to stroll and relax and even let dogs play. The park is a centerpiece of an effort to build a vibrant downtown built around the quaint nature of Academy Street. Academy Street in particular is meant to retain that older Cary feel, whereas other parts of downtown are meant to have more density, Stiegel says. Stiegel notes that a quarter acre of land would sell for around $75,000 when he became town manager 6 years ago, but now the price would be around $350,000. A full acre, he says, would sell for north of $1.3 million. From the beginning, we've approached the park project as not just a park, but as a place like no other in the state that will serve as the anchoring economic driver of our downtown's revitalization, Mayor Harold Weinbrecht says. Fenton integrates art into project. Hines and Columbia Development tapped three popular artists to leave their marks on the 69-acre Fenton project rising in Cary. Kelsey Montague, known for her immersive street murals, will create a large mural featuring her iconic wings at Fenton this month. Montague, based out of Colorado, says she has created over 300 murals. The muralist is known for her What Lifts You campaign and has worked in Nashville, Tennessee, Buenos Aires, and New York City. There will be images hidden within the wings that represent the community of Fenton and the area, Montague says. Ben Butler, an abstract sculptor based in Memphis, Tennessee, has created 3 sculptures for the Trinity Art Walk along Trinity Road. Butler has installations in hotels, hospitals, parks, and public spaces across the United States. Louise Jones, a Detroit-based muralist, created a large-scale mural inspired by Flora native to North Carolina. The work is Jones's 3rd in the Triangle. Comedy Club to lead revitalized Village Subway. The part of Cameron Village that was a longtime staple of Raleigh's nightlife is finally being revitalized. Goodnight's Comedy Club is moving to temporary space at what's now the Village District in August at the site of the former K&W cafeteria, but the club plans to move underground to the former site of the Village Subway later this year. The underground location is beneath the Fresh Market. From 1971 to 1984, the Village Subway, also called the Underground, was the home to clubs such as the Pier and the Frog and Nightgown, and showcased up-and-coming acts such as REM in 1980 and local favorites such as Mike Cross. Village District officials have talked about restoring the area since 2017. Early detection, a theme at V Foundation Summit. Finding ways to detect cancer early was a pervasive theme May 3rd through 4th when a number of young scientists getting special funding from the V Foundation gathered in Research Triangle Park to share ideas and learn. Each year, the V Foundation, created by former NC State University basketball coach Jim Valvano, who died of cancer in 1993, gives a number of two-year $100,000 grants to rising scientists. And since 2016, a number of those V scholars have gathered to discuss what they are learning. The idea is this grant gives them leverage to do new and exciting things, says Carol Wegner, the vice president of research and grants administration for the Carey Bass Foundation. Wegner says that given the pandemic, many people had delayed regular checkups, making them more vulnerable to underlying problems. It became quite obvious that we really need to focus on early detection and to get people care as soon as possible, she says. Another emphasis, helping the scientists speak in a language understood by the general public or people in other disciplines. New leader named at Durham Biotech. A Durham biotech that recently expanded in the Triangle has a new CEO. Mark Womack is stepping into the role at KBI Biopharma, a global contract development and manufacturing organization which, along with its headquarters, has multiple facilities in the Triangle, the most recent of which is a $150 million commercial manufacturing facility in Research Triangle Park that opened in April. The 150,000 square foot facility employs more than 200 people, and the company expects this number to reach 350 by the end of the year. And finally, Orange County gets more fiber. Internet service provider NorthState, which operates out of a High Point office in North Carolina, is expanding its fiber service in Orange County. The company is bringing fiber to 28,000 homes and businesses in the county, including nearly 10,000 locations that currently have little or no access to high-speed internet, the company announced recently. The investment represents laying 990 miles of fiber, and the company projects service to come online in some areas next spring. And now we turn to the On Greater Triangle Growth page, written by Evan Hoopfer. Harnett County sees growing interest, developers looking at Harnett as prices surge in Wake County. A developer in Lee County turned his gaze east toward Harnett County recently with a big land buy. Bobby and Elizabeth Branch purchased a 365-acre farm in Broadway for $4 million, according to a deed filed April 25. The land sits just off U.S. Highway 421 near the Harnett-Lee County border. Bobby Branch is an active land developer in Sanford and Lee County. For example, Branch is part of the team looking to build a multifamily residential complex with accompanying commercial space near the U.S. Highway 15501 and U.S. Highway 1 intersect. Regarding the purchase in Harnett County, Bobby Branch says he didn't have many details to share yet regarding his plans for the land. We bought the Broadway property for future investment, he says. When asked if it would be for residential or commercial development, he says, more than likely residential. The property has a 2,434-square-foot, three-bedroom, two-bathroom home on-site that was recently renovated. Gardner Reynolds and Frank Gombatz of Legacy Farms and Ranches of North Carolina and Fonville Morrissey, a Long & Foster company, represented the seller, Tim Patterson. Developers are increasingly eyeing Harnett County as land prices skyrocket in Wake and Durham counties. Many new developments have been unveiled in Harnett County in the last year, including Capeton, a project from Raleigh-based Greenfield Communities that is slated to have 2,250 homes at full build-out. The company is also assembling 300 acres along NC Highway 42. Elsewhere in the county, Dallas-based Reeder Land Development is planning nearly 1,000 homes along U.S. Highway 401, and Los Angeles-based KB Home is planning several communities in Harnett County. D.R. Horton buys over 400 acres in Lee County. The nation's largest home builder just made a huge purchase in Lee County. An LLC addressed to D.R. Horton purchased more than 426 acres in Sanford for nearly $32 million, according to a deed filed April 19. The land sits along U.S. Highway 1 and about 10 minutes north of downtown Sanford. The deed lists the description of the property as Phase 1A of the Galvin's Ridge subdivision, which is a D.R. Horton's first community in Sanford. In December, the company purchased 95 lots within Galvin Ridge's Galvin's Ridge for more than $5.4 million. It's unclear how many homes are planned within this most recent $32 million purchase, as a D.R. Horton spokesperson declines to say how many lots are being planned on the newly acquired land. The community will sit near Central Carolina Enterprise Park, where life sciences companies Astellas Gene Therapies and AbbZena have new facilities. Project adding 170 homes near Franklinton. An active developer in the Triangle and Triad is getting ready to start construction on a new housing development in Franklin County that will include 170 new homes. Greenhawk Corporation of Raleigh plans to start development of Maple Ridge in May, says Jeremy Medlin, executive vice president of real estate for the company. The development sits on Cedar Creek Road across from Franklinton High School. Maple Ridge will have 86 townhomes and 84 single-family homes. And in a section called He Said It, we have a quote from Reed Smith, founder and CEO of Clayton-based developer River Wild, on what his company looks for when hiring. Today, at least for us, the resume is becoming almost irrelevant. In fact, we would probably have somebody with no experience. What we look for is the will to win, the effort, the grit, and the character to get after it. And finally, a big number, $54 million. The amount Brazos Residential, a Dallas-based private equity company, recently spent on three apartment complexes in Fayetteville. The company likes Fayetteville because of its proximity to Raleigh and its cheaper rent prices than the City of Oaks. And now we turn to the On Finance and Tech page, written by Lauren Onasorge. Developers wary as interest rates rise, but no one plans to slow down yet in the hot Triangle market. As recession fears heighten and interest rates rise, Triangle developers are watching the Fed. That includes Cliff Minsley, co-founder of Raleigh real estate firm 10 Federal, which is in the early phases of preparing for a $100 million fundraise. "We are getting nervous," he says. "We have had just such a long extended run, so we're being careful about our business strategy." And that may mean leveraging less debt than in funds past. While he still considers it to be a bull market, talks in Washington, D.C. give him pause as he maps out the firm's aggressive growth strategy. He's not alone. The entire industry is watching the Fed, and with good reason, says Greg Sandruder, managing partner of HM Partners. "Our economy from a real estate development perspective has just never been better," he says. Enter in the Fed, upsetting the apple cart, Sandruder says. But developers still think the demand is there to offset the costs in the hot Triangle market, and they have no plans to slow down. Altogether, developers say they're bullish about the Triangle, so much so that they believe the region would fare well even if the cost of borrowing ticks up exponentially. "We have such a long, powerful runway in Raleigh-Durham that our relative performance is going to be superior to other parts of the country," Sandruder says. Jeff Sheehan, managing partner at Morrisville-based Trinity Capital, agrees. "Maybe we have to incrementally increase our asking rental rates on new projects to absorb that," he says, "but we're still a third of the cost of operating in Cambridge, Massachusetts. On a relative basis, we still look really, really attractive." Fidelity to hire 1,700 workers for RTP campus. Fidelity Investments is planning to add 1,700 employees to its fast-growing Triangle operation as it starts to bring associates back to the office through a flexibility-focused approach. The Boston financial giant hired almost 2,000 people in North Carolina last year, the majority of those at its Research Triangle Park campus. Now it wants to grow its company-wide headcount by more than 12,000 jobs by the end of the third quarter. The recent announcement involves jobs across the spectrum, but 69% of the roles will be customer-facing positions and 14% will be in technology positions, according to the company. This one is personal for Entrepreneur. A Durham startup hopes to change the lives of patients with prostate cancer, taking incontinence out of the equation when they weigh treatment options. Levy Medical, which recently closed on more than $1 million in outside capital, is possibly less than 2 years from having its urological devices available to patients. It's the brainchild of Bruce Choi, its chief technology officer. Levy started after entrepreneurial tinkering became something personal after Choi's father was diagnosed with prostate cancer. Choi stumbled into urology, particularly incontinence, a side effect of some prostate surgeries. Choi saw how the issue of incontinence played into treatment. "It's neat to be able to say I'm helping to resolve a very real problem," Choi says. And in a section called He Said It, we have a quote from Tim Spence, President and incoming CEO of Cincinnati-based Fifth Third Bank, when asked what could derail the bank's growth in the region. When you have the position we have and the market has the momentum it has, generally if you have a regret, it's that you didn't move fast enough. And now we turn to the On Healthcare and Higher Ed page, written by Zach Ezone. The first headline, Cineo CEO retiring, new leader named, Michelle Keefe will lead the booming Mooresville company. Cineo's Health, based in Mooresville and one of the largest contract research organizations in the world, has a new CEO. Cineo announced April 29 that CEO Alastair McDonald is retiring after 20 years with the company. Michelle Keefe, who previously was the company's president of medical affairs and commercial solutions, will take over the lead of the public company. Keefe, who has more than 30 years of experience in the life sciences industry, including 2 decades at pharmaceutical giant Pfizer, joined Cineo in 2017 and has helped drive its commercial business. In addition to being a CRO, the company operates as a contract commercial organization, billing itself as the only fully integrated biopharmaceutical solutions organization. Revenue the company receives from its commercial solutions business has grown from about $392.86 million in 2017 to $1.2 billion last year, according to earnings reports. Cineo's Health holds a unique market position to maximize benefits to customers while driving enhanced returns for shareholders, Keefe stated. I look forward to continuing to build on our successes as we accelerate toward becoming a more intelligent enterprise and impactful healthcare leader. The company's board of directors appointed Keefe to the new role April 28, according to a U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission filing. McDonald's resignation from Cineo became effective the following day, although he'll remain a company advisor through March. I am incredibly proud of all we have accomplished to strengthen Cineo Health's leadership in today's dynamic and rapidly evolving marketplace, McDonald stated. With our integrated value proposition firmly established, differentiating how Cineo Health helps customers accelerate success across the product development continuum, now is the right time for a new leader to continue driving our business forward. Keefe has appointed Michael Brooks, the company's previous chief development officer and global head of clinical development solutions, to fill a newly created chief operating officer position. In this role, Brooks will be responsible for day-to-day operations for the company within clinical development, medical affairs, and commercial solutions. Former ICVIA workers seek class action status in lawsuit. A group of former employees for ICVIA is pushing for a class action lawsuit against the contract research organization in Durham and alleging mismanagement of 401k retirement plans. 4 former ICVIA employees filed a motion in federal court April 18 to certify a proposed class, which could include thousands of members, as part of a lawsuit that began less than 2 years ago. In June 2020, 6 of the global company's former employees filed a lawsuit in U.S. District Court for the Middle District of North Carolina, accusing ICVIA of breaching its fiduciary duties under the Employment Retirement Income Security Act. The law, which Congress passed in 1974, sets minimum standards for most retirement and health plans in private industry to protect the individuals who participate in those plans. In their suit, the former employees claim ICVIA, which has tens of thousands of employees and other defendants listed in the complaint, failed to disclose the expenses and risks of the plan and selected and retained high-cost and poorly performing investments. ICVIA has said the claims are without merit. In a motion filed in October 2020 to dismiss the cookie-cutter complaint, ICVIA said the claims fail because they offer no facts that plausibly show ICVIA employed a deficient process by offering perfectly acceptable and routinely used investment options. The number of lawsuits targeting a company's alleged mismanagement of retirement plans has increased over the last few years. The National Law Review wrote in February that more than 150 of these types of class action suits have been filed nationwide since January 2020. Drug maker secures first FDA approval. Less than 4 years after its formation, a Durham pharmaceutical company has secured its first drug approval from the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. Mycovia Pharmaceuticals announced April 28 that regulators approved Vivjoa, an oral antifungal drug intended to treat recurrent vulvovaginal candidiasis, or RVVC, more commonly known as chronic yeast infection. This is the first FDA-approved medication to treat this condition. It's an exciting inflection point for us, Mycovia CEO Patrick Jordan says. We've been thinking for the last 4 years about developing molecules, and now that we have a molecule that's been approved, the attention shifts to commercialization. And in a section called She Said It, we have a quote from Chantel Grumhaus, Associate Dean of Advancement for the UNC Chapel Hill Kenan Flagler Business School, on starting construction later this year on a $150 million building. This is the first addition to the school's campus in 20 years and will double the number of students in its undergraduate program. We've grown the undergraduate program as much as we can. We're maxed out at this point. And finally, a big number, $415 million, the amount Durham's Bioventus had planned to raise in a private offering to help fund the recent acquisition of medical device firm CartiHeal in a deal worth up to $450 million. But Bioventus announced May 3 it was dropping the offering due to unfavorable market conditions. And now we turn to the On Retail and Restaurants page, written by Laura Bramette. New Raleigh Hotel trades for $31.5 million. Former Origin Raleigh, purchased by Boston-based Pyramid Group. A hotel in downtown Raleigh is changing owners and brands before reaching its two-year anniversary. Formerly known as the Origin Hotel Raleigh, Hotel 83 was sold for $31.5 million in late April to Pyramid Hotel Group, the Boston-based company that manages the Washington Duke Inn and Golf Club in Durham. The new owner is planning to rebrand the hotel this summer to a Tribute Portfolio Hotel, part of Marriott's upscale collection of independent hotels. The 126-room hotel is a seven-story building in Glenwood South's Block 83 development. The hotel opened as the Origin Raleigh, operated by the Thrash Group, in the summer of 2020. Its name was changed when it sold, April 26. Located at 603 West Morgan Street, the hotel also features a full-service restaurant and bar called Good Day, Good Night. At its opening, the former owners advertised the restaurant as thoughtfully sourced plant-forward menu with a commitment to working with North Carolina farmers. Based on the Hotel 83 website, both the restaurant and the hotel appear to be open and operating as normal. Thrash Group began planning the Origin Raleigh in 2017 after purchasing the 0.23-acre lot from Block 83 developer Heritage Properties for $2.25 million. The building measures about 68,000 square feet, according to Wake County property records, and the property has a total assessed value of $16 million. The deed for the recent sale is dated April 29. Based in Mississippi, Thrash Group is known for developing boutique hotels with contemporary looks. The company lists two other Origin hotels in Colorado, one in Lexington, Kentucky, and one coming soon to Austin, Texas. The Origin Raleigh is the group's only venture into North Carolina, according to its website. Pyramid Hotel Group manages dozens of hotels, including the Hilton North Raleigh, the Stateview Hotel, J.B. Duke Hotel, the Lodge at Duke Medical Center, and the Washington Duke. The Washington Duke is a AAA Four Diamond Hotel owned by Duke University. Chefs named to lead new concept at Giorgio's Hospitality Group. Giorgio's Hospitality Group has named chefs to lead the company's two new restaurants opening in North Hills this summer. Brian Genzer will serve as chef and partner for Spanish tapas restaurant Las Ramblas, and Jefe Lumbiano will serve as chef for Giorgio Pizza Bar. Both restaurants are set to open later this summer in the Park and Market building. Giorgio Bacazzias, recently named Restaurateur of the Year by the North Carolina Restaurant and Lodging Association, has an existing restaurant nearby, Rosewater Kitchen and Bar. The acclaimed chef is also opening Asian restaurant Krill in Durham later this year. Iconic Crook's Corner on path to reopening. A Chapel Hill restaurant known as a Southern food institution could get another lease on life. Crook's Corner, credited with popularizing shrimp and grits, closed in June 2021 after 40 years of business. Shannon Healy, owner of Alley 26 in Durham, took over ownership of the restaurant in 2019. Since its closure last summer, Healy has been working to renovate the building. A tweet circulating recently claimed that the restaurant will reopen in September, but Healy told Triangle Business Journal that the claim was baseless. He is currently working with the town of Chapel Hill on the restaurant's ongoing construction, but has no reopening date set. And in a section called He Said It, we have a quote from Chef Kyle Fletcher, the new culinary director at Wake Forest's Norse Brewing Company. Previous stops included Y Hill Kitchen and Brewing and Triangle Beer Company. I've always been guided by what is locally available from farmers here in the Triangle, using everything provided to pay respect to the effort required to create these foods and flavors. And finally, we have a notable number, 4. The number of locations that local brand 321 Coffee will have by the end of 2022. The company, based on a mission of inclusiveness, had just one location open at the start of the year. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the Viewpoint page to read the editor's notebook, written by Sugata Mukherjee, editor-in-chief of Triangle Business Journal. The headline, Housing Market Opens Door for Frank Discussion. An interesting report was released by Adam, a curator of real estate data, that's spelled A-T-T-O-M, that showed $328 billion in property taxes were levied on single-family homes across the U.S. in 2021, up just 1.6% from $323 billion in 2020. That was well down from the 5.4% increase seen from 2019 to 2020, and marked the second smallest rise over the past 5 years. At the same time, home prices jumped an average of 16% in 2021. So I called Rick Sharga, the executive vice president of market intelligence at Adam, who oversaw the study after analyzing 87 million homes. I'm shocked that the real tax increases are so small when compared to the increased value of the homes, he says. That's because municipalities are intentional in making sure homeowners do not have to pay taxes in line with the increase in the value of their property. In Wake County and hundreds of other counties across the country, the process often is called the revenue neutral method, a term often misunderstood by many. Revenue neutral does not mean taxes won't go up. It means the government will use a model for property owners to undertake an equitable share of the taxes, with some paying a little more and others paying a little less, as long as the final revenue line stays consistent with earlier models. In other words, because of the increase in the number and value of homes, the actual tax rate actually goes down. For example, in Wake County, the property tax rate was about 72 cents for every $100 of value. By 2022, it was down to 60 cents. Based on the reassessment value of the property, some had to pay more, others less, and a small number of owners had their rates unchanged. Today, property owners in Wake County are all home rich. They remain shocked every time they go to Zillow or Redfin websites to check the estimated worth of their homes. But there is a dark side of the moon. Affordability is getting worse, and unless the baton is carried by our municipalities, options will remain limited and get worse. To tackle this issue, Wake County has imposed new 1-cent taxes on residents that has allowed it to build new affordable homes in the area. But there may be a better way. Like a stock, a home value increase is only on paper unless, of course, one sells it. So instead of sticking to the revenue neutral policy, perhaps there's a hybrid model that county commissioners should consider. Let me explain. Say the property owner owes $5,000 in annual property taxes currently, but when it comes time for reassessment in 2024, based on the same rate, that owner may owe $8,000 in property taxes because the home has appreciated in value. For folks on a fixed income, every penny matters. They still have to pay higher property taxes even when they do not have any intention of selling the property. But what if we had a system of paying the increased amount when the home is sold? So say in 2024, the property is assessed for $8,000, but the current rate is $5,000. The owner pays whatever comes out of the revenue neutral model, but if the home is sold in 2025, the $3,000 must be paid as part of closing costs. The process is similar to when people sell their stocks. Of course, the system is far more complicated than just comparing it to a stock sale, but the point is, if municipalities could harness a sliver of the increasing value of properties around our communities to take care of folks who are not as fortunate, property owners may give the new model a closer look and not get mad. Just because we have done it the same way for years does not mean it is the best way. Things around us have changed dramatically. No one can argue that. And with our remaining time with the Triangle Business Journal, we'll turn to some general news stories. Rezoning sought on P Street. New owners want 30-story development near Smoky Hollow, written by Cliff Barnes. The new owners of a prime downtown Raleigh property who acquired the spot on Peace Street in an auction late last year are looking to rezone the land and adjoining properties to allow for up to 30 stories of mixed-use development. Raleigh Development Company 2, LLC, purchased 418 West Peace Street, a 0.65-acre parcel from the North Carolina Department of Transportation, for $3.76 million. The assessed value of the property is $3.71 million. Proceeds from the auction sale go to the State Highway Fund. The deed was recorded in March. That property, which houses an abandoned 16,778-square-foot industrial warehouse built in 1947, is currently zoned for industrial mixed use up to 12 stories. The proposed zoning, which would include a next-door property at 424 Peace Street and seven adjoining properties off West Street, is for up to 30 stories with an urban general frontage. The nine parcels included in the rezoning requests are 418 and 424 West Peace Street and 708, 714, 716, 722, 726, 804, and 818 Northwest Street. The main purpose of the rezoning is to allow more flexibility in height of future buildings on the site, documents filed by the Morningstar Law Group show. The total acreage of the nine properties, all owned by Raleigh Development Company, managed by real estate veterans Bobby Lewis and Donald Carter, is more than 2.6 acres, with several businesses currently on the land, including Endless Grind Skateboard Shop, Knuckle Up Boxing Gym, an RDU Airport Taxi Dispatch, and Spider Strength Gym. Lewis has said that while the Raleigh Development Company is discussing options for the future use of the land, no definitive plans have been set. The total assessed value of the combined properties is more than $12.3 million. The properties were purchased over the years for a combined $9.3 million. The area borders the city's planned 14-acre Devereaux Meadow Park, land that was once the site of the Devereaux Meadow Baseball Stadium, where minor leaguers such as future Hall of Famer Carl Yastrzemski played. Across the street is the Smoky Hollow development, which consists of a Publix grocery, apartments, and numerous retail spaces. And finally for today with the Triangle Business Journal, we'll end with the Business Pulse survey. The survey question, do you own or plan to buy an electric vehicle? There were a total number of responses of 167. 40%, the most, said, don't own one, but thinking about buying. 30% say, don't own one and never will. 20% say, I plan to buy one. And 10% say, yes, I own one. And we'll go ahead and stop there as we've run out of time for today's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm Derek Frost, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. The Triangle Business Journal is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. So long until next time, and thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.